Alrighty, I need to follow through on a promise I made yesterday and I've been making over the course of today's show. This is Brandon McGinley from the Post-Gazette. I'm a columnist over there. Filling in for Marty today. Last week, I wrote a column digging into how the city of Pittsburgh spent the American Rescue Plan Act money that it received from the federal government in response to the COVID pandemic. It was very predictable at the time that this was going to be a very frustrating thing for the city because it was an influx of $335 million. And I think that most people were rightly cynical or suspicious or pessimistic about how that money was going to be spent. We're now at the very end of the spend period for that money. It was began in 2021. It needed to be assigned to particular projects by the end of 2024, and it has to be spent by the end of 2026. On the bright side, the city is on track to spend all of that money on time, at least according to its own documentation. Whether there's reasons to doubt that documentation is a different question that I'm not probably going to be able to get into today. Maybe a little bit. $335 million. It's a lot of money. You might ask yourself, if you are a city resident or if you spend a lot of time in the city, has there been a visible improvement in city facilities or programs based on the fact the city got about half of its annual budget all at once to spend on projects that were vaguely related to pandemic relief, and that definition was extremely broad. It could have been used for lots and lots of things. If you spend a lot of time in the city or live in the city and felt that there were no visible improvements based on that $335 million, you would be right. And so I've spent a lot of time digging into where that money went. And my work is not done. It's only, barely only scratched the surface. But here's a little bit of what I know. Of that $335 million, only about $74 million of it went directly from the American Rescue Plan Trust Fund, where the money was put, to a vendor. That is to say, to a company or to a nonprofit out of the city. Most of that money, about three quarters of it, was, the way I put it, was metabolized by the city. It went into the general fund to fund, it was supposed to fund existing positions so people weren't laid off. It ended up funding increased positions at the city, which put the city in a difficult financial position once the money expired. A lot of the money went to the Office of Management and Budget of the city, about 70 some odd million dollars. Where it went from there, I honestly do not yet know, and I'm still working on that. But there's no public-facing information that tells you who got that money. I do not mean to suggest it went anywhere nefarious, but there is basically zero transparency about where that money went. About $65 million went to the Urban Redevelopment Authority for a variety of programs. The programs are listed, but the amount of money that went to those programs is not. It is very unclear where the URA money went and whether it had any positive effects for the city. Then there's, that's the money that was, as I say, metabolized by the city, kind of devoured by the city, and where it went is not clear, and I'm still working on that. And I will, whenever I know more, I will write about it in the Post-Gazette and tell you here. What I want to focus on is the $74 million that went directly out of the city to vendors. A lot of that was spent on everyday maintenance. Here's the thing. That 335 million, and we'll just put all that to one side. We'll just say the 74 million. That's 74 million that was used more or less directly. This was a once in a generation, once in a lifetime chance to invest in projects that it's tough for the city to spend on its own. And there are some good examples of good ways the city spent that money. The city funded the Davis Avenue Bridge, the pedestrian bridge in Brighton Heights, that used to be a road bridge that connected Davis Avenue to Riverview Park. The city used a lot of the federal money to rebuild that. That was a good use of it. The city also sent a lot of money to Pittsburgh Water, formerly known as the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, to replace lead-contaminated pipes. That was about $17 million. Another good use of that money. But one of the most frustrating parts of the entire ARPA spend process for me and for, I think, a lot of Pittsburghers was how much of that money was promised to go into facilities that would have directly improved quality of life for the city. At the very beginning, over $20 million was set aside or was planned for recreation centers and senior centers in the city. This would have been a major improvement for facilities that are some of the most important that the city has. Talk about kids. Talk about kids not having a place to go or kids getting into trouble. Having nicer rec centers with better programming is one of the best things the city could spend its money on, and it saves money in the long run in some other respects by being places where problems get headed off, where problems get nipped. You have less spending on public safety and public health and human services if kids are having better childhoods and are keeping out of trouble. One of the most frustrating parts of this was seeing how that money ended up being spent. Of that $20 million that was originally set aside for facilities like rec centers, only 7.5 was actually spent on facilities, and most of that was not on the rec centers. $1.5 million went to the Marshall Mansion in Mellon Park to spruce that up. And a few million more went to a Department of Public Works facility in Knoxville. Now, I'm not saying these are not worthy things. The DPW facility needed to be rebuilt. Marshall Mansion needed money. But so did the rec centers. So did the senior centers. And at the end of the day, only 10% of the promised money for the rec centers actually got to the rec centers. Only about $2 million was spent. Where did the rest of the money go? Where did the money that was supposed to go into our rec centers end up? A lot of it ended up in demolitions and paving. Now, at first glance, it's not a big problem. We need to demolish buildings. There are decrepit city-owned buildings, and there are other buildings that needed city money to be demolished. I'm all in favor of demolitions. Obviously, we're all also in favor of paving. But here's the trick. Here's what happened under the Ghani administration. The federal money that was used on demolitions and paving was not in addition to city money, but it replaced city money. So we didn't actually get more demolitions. We didn't get more paving. All we did was replace city money that was then used for other things, like hiring hundreds of new DPW workers who didn't have equipment to use. The problem, and we'll talk about this after the break, one of the biggest problems the city has is counterintuitive. It's that it actually doesn't, it struggles to spend money. I know everyone thinks the city spends too much money, and there's some truth in that. But when it comes to capital projects, when it comes to spending money on the facilities that make the city livable, it's the opposite problem. they can't get their act together to get the money out the door and actually make the improvements. And instead, they plow it into paving, which they were going to do anyways. And the money was basically wasted. I'm going to tell you a little more about that after this. Hey, it's Brandon McGinley filling in for Marty today, and I am talking right now about how the city spent or didn't spend the massive infusion of federal bucks that came during and after the COVID pandemic. $335 million. Most of it is difficult for the public to account for because of the lack of transparency from the city. Of the money that we can directly account for using public information, a lot of promises were left unfulfilled. Places like Cowley-Getman Rec Center, which is this beautiful building in Troy Hill. Baseball still played on the field next door, but the building itself, broken windows, boarded up windows, boarded up doors. Millions of federal money was promised to design a renovation and then execute a renovation of the Cowley-Getman building. Very little of that happened. And if you go up there today, it looks just like it did several years ago, if not worse. This is the reason, by the way, that Corey O'Connor, when he was running for mayor against Ed Gainey, did a press conference right in front of that building. Because it was a symbolic of a broken promise from the city to spend money that it received with very few strings attached to actually improve livability for the city and not just plow money into nonprofits or set itself up like a foundation when what it is a city. Of the money, of that $74 million, and I'm going to be digging more into this later, but of that $74 million that we can't account for, a lot of it went, or a few million of it went to things like the Food Justice Fund, which was then divvied up among a whole bunch of different nonprofits in ways that are themselves unaccountable because it went through a middleman, and that's a whole other conversation for another day. Today, I want to talk about the facilities that weren't funded, the rec centers, the senior centers, that the lifeblood of their neighborhoods, but that compare very, very badly to suburban amenities. You know, Corey O'Connor talks about wanting to make Pittsburgh the first choice for families. It's a great, great thing. Unfortunately, we missed several years of opportunities to invest in the kind of facilities that would make Pittsburgh the first, or at least a competitive choice for families, if not the first choice for families, at least a competitive choice for families. Sure, the city is probably never going to have facilities on par with Peters Township or Franklin Park, if only because of space. But we do have Frick Park and Schenley Park and Riverview Park, so do have that going for us. I say us because, as you may or may not know, I do live in the city, and I'm passionate about the city and making the city the kind of place where families do want to live. And the past several years was a tremendous missed opportunity. So how did the city fail to spend the money? Again, we usually think of the city spending money too freely, not being unable to spend money. And the fact of the matter is the city just does not have the capacity to execute major projects, certainly doing several at the same time. There are some exceptions to the rule. The city is actually really good because it has some really good workers in this area and developing playgrounds. Really, really good at that. They actually produce some really cool playgrounds. But building projects has proven difficult. Rec centers, senior centers. One of the reasons, it's pretty clear to me, and this became particularly pronounced under the Gainey administration, was that the city is constrained by a lot of its own rules with regard to contracting. There are pretty aggressive goals in terms of minority-owned contractors, women-owned contractors, LGBT-owned contractors, veteran-owned contractors. And there are only so many of these businesses around. And I will absolutely say it's a problem in Pittsburgh that there are too few black-owned contractors, that there are too few minority-owned contractors generally. That's a problem. But the city can't fix that with the snap of its fingers. And when it imposes rules on itself to get particular kinds of contractors when there aren't very many of them, what that's unfortunately not doing is generating more contractors. What it's doing is it's slowing down work. There was a very particular example of this in Brighton Heights, where the senior center there, it's a beautiful building. I think it's actually an old convent, I think, or something like that. Beautiful old building, but the senior center is tucked in the basement because the upper two floors are derelict, unsafe. All kinds of promises for years were made about fixing that up. And it was put on hold for another year, in part due to the city imposing new rules, new regulations on itself with regard to diverse contracting. Generally speaking, these rules are put in place out of goodwill, an attempt to ensure that city resources are spent on diverse businesses. But for complicated reasons, there aren't a huge number of them, which makes it difficult for the city to actually do the contracting it needs to do. Ultimately, the city is going to be faced and is faced with a choice. Either relieve itself of some of the rules under which it has to operate in order to build, reduce the regulations, reduce its own bureaucratic constraints, or it's going to need more money from its citizens to hire more people who can navigate its own rules. I like to think that most people would prefer to unleash construction rather than pay more for less construction. But the political situation is what it is. But I think that, in looking into how this money was spent and more importantly, not spent, the big lesson that I came away with was that Pittsburgh actually has the opposite of a spending problem. Or it has a spending problem. It has a spending too slowly problem. It has a building too slowly problem. It has a contracting too slowly problem. It has an inability to execute the projects that a city of this size needs to be able to execute. And I think that fixing that, and this goes to permitting and all kinds of other things that are really boring, but if you've dealt with them, you know they're really important. This goes to the kind of things that I do think this mayoral administration does want to fix, does want to unleash the city's ability. Because there's a lot of people who work for the city who want to do really good work, but they're constantly being constrained by their own rules. Getting more money out the door more efficiently, leading to better facilities, better livability, that's one of the best things that this administration could do, and I hope to see more of it going forward. We'll be back after this. Hey, it's Brandon McGinley filling in for Marty today. Before I get started, I want to tell you about the Berg Proud Challenge. It's hashtag Berg Proud. The Berg Proud Challenge is gaining momentum, and we need you. Join Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank, which, by the way, I mean, the food bank, even now, years after COVID, I mean, the stress on the food system is still, I think it's maybe abated since maybe 2020, 2021, but it's still extreme. It's not visible. You have to, like, if you drive past a food pantry at certain times of day, you'll see lines that are much longer than they used to be. I mean, it's not visible, but it's still an extreme need. In any event, join the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank along with the Penguins, Pirates, and Steelers by moving 30 miles this June. You can grab a one-of-a-kind hashtag Berg Proud shirt featuring all three black and gold logos when you start a fundraising campaign and raise your first $25. Plus, your contribution goes twice as far thanks to a matching grant from the Richard King Mellon Foundation. Sign up today at pittsburghfoodbank.org/odysseypgh. That's AUDACYPGH. 30 miles. 30 miles is not that bad. It's like a mile a day. It's not that bad. I don't know. It sounds like a lot, but the nice thing about that kind of thing is you just do it a little bit at a time and it builds up. And it's a great habit. Like, I don't like running just to run. I need some competitions. Like, I like to play deck hockey, for instance. I don't play as much as I'd like, but I like to play deck hockey. I get my exercise by competing. The idea of just running doesn't really do it for me, but I do, or like if something were chasing me, that might make it appealing, but not too scary. But I think 30 miles of hiking, would be a blast because you could do like 6 or 7 miles each weekend without doing that. That'd be great. In any event, okay. But you should, you know, definitely participate in that. And the Richard King Mellon Foundation, they do a lot of tremendous work. You know, Pittsburgh's blessed with a tremendous philanthropic community, billions and billions of dollars. Probably second per capita in the country, behind, I think, Seattle, because of all the Gates. I think it's the Microsoft money out there or something like that. Okay, that was a tangent. What holds Pittsburgh back? Its government, its culture. What makes it hard to make pragmatic decisions? What makes it hard to get things done? Now, I know a lot of people are thinking, because I see it all the time in the comments on the Post-Gazette, oh, it's because it's run by Democrats. Well, lots of things are run by Democrats, and it's not like people talk like there's a seismic difference. That doesn't make sense. But people talk like there's this massive difference between a Democrat and a Republican. But when you go out to like parts of the country that are run entirely by Republicans, well, lots of people just identify as Republicans in order to play the game. And it's the same thing in the city. It's the same thing in Allegheny County. There are a lot of people who participate in Democratic politics because they like politics and they want to be part of their community and they just enjoy the game, who are not super left-wing, in the same way that there are a lot of Republicans in Republican areas that are not super right-wing. And frankly, competence, and I know a lot of my Republican listeners are going to chafe at this, but competence is pretty evenly distributed among Republicans and Democrats. In my experience in media, there are, the way I look at it actually, when it comes to how people in the game work with media, I always say there are pros and there are hacks. And there are Republican pros and there are Republican hacks, and there are Democratic pros and there are Democratic hacks. It's not just that it's Democrats. I think the fact that it's a one-party system is a problem. I think the fact that there's no considerable, consistent, real opposition to local Democrats, I think that's a problem because it means that they're only talking to each other and they're only threatened by each other and they don't have to think about ideas from the right at all, except in as much as they get laundered through the Democratic Party. But anything that sounds too Republican, sounds too conservative, gets eliminated immediately. That's a problem. But I think it's the same problem, again, in Republican-run areas where there's no significant Democratic opposition because there are ideas that could be useful in those areas that sound too liberal and they just get excluded immediately. The problem isn't Republicans or Democrats. The problem is when there's no competition and the collection of possible ideas is too narrow. And that definitely happens. But there's a structural problem that goes beyond that in the city, and it's one that is shared with other Rust Belt towns, but I think Pittsburgh has it to a distinctive degree, which is, this is a city itself. The city itself is 300,000 people. It's ticked up a little bit according to recent data. It's like maybe 308-ish, but we'll know more at the next census because those numbers in between the censuses are not always accurate. In the 40s and 50s, it was 650,000. So we're down more than 50% from peak. It's not unique in America. Other cities have gone through similar contractions. Pittsburgh's is one of the most pronounced for a city this size, though. And while city government has definitely shrunk, the overall culture of the city is still one of a 650,000 person city and not a 300,000 person city. A 300,000 person city should be much more nimble. But the political culture here is still one that is for a much bigger, more lumbering city. The culture of permitting, the culture of taxation, the culture of bureaucracy, all of these things are much more, even if the rules have changed, the sense of how the city is supposed to operate, then the sheer number and variety of commissions and agencies. It is very complicated, and I'm pretty sure more complicated than your apps. Certainly, in fact, I can say with pretty high confidence, much more complicated than your average city of 300,000. Other cities of this size can move a lot more nimbly, can get money out the door in a positive way, not out the door in the sense of spending on, you know, vanity projects, but out the door in the sense of building cool facilities that people want to experience. To the extent that we still think of ourselves as a big-time player, to the extent that we still think of ourselves as a city that is this kind of lumbering 600,000-person behemoth, we're not responding to reality. And it is amazing just, you know, if you spend any amount of time on Grant Street, just how big that culture feels for a city this size. But big is not always good. Big in this case just means slow. Hey, DJ, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I dealt with a lot of tradesmen, and they would never want to work down that city because all the hassles of permits and, you know, they just make it so hard to get anything done.
Yes, absolutely.
It's awful. There's so many tradesmen that can't even work down there.
And it's not even just working with the city. It's working in the city. Like, and so there are folks who will say that they won't do, like, really talented contractors. There are really talented contractors in this county, in this region, who will not do work in the city of Pittsburgh because the permitting situation is such a hassle. They'd much rather deal with Bethel Park or deal with Cranberry or whatever. And that's just, and some of that comes with being the city surrounded by smaller suburbs, but a lot of it is fixable. And is and especially, again, for a city this size, this is one of the things that O'Connor would talk about. Like, New York City's getting permits out the door faster than we are. And New York City's, what, 25 times bigger, you know?
You know, they need to open up the people to make bids on work here. Like, it's not working, you know?
Yeah.
Five guys watching one guy work fixing roads is not working. You know, it's 100 years of this.
Yeah.
No decent roads. And take bids because that drives prices down, but they want to keep it all to themselves.
Yeah.
And when we voted on this stadium tax and we voted against it, they did it anyway. How'd they get away with that? Where's that money going? And not only that, is this forever now? Aren't those things done by now?
Well, we're still paying off the debt. DJ, we're still paying off the debt on those things. So that's where that money, that's the RAD money. That's the Regional Asset District money. And I do not immediately have in front of me the number, but it's I think 20-something million a year is still going on the debt service on the stadiums. And that lease, those leases are coming up soon. This is, we could talk about this. I'm happy to come back to the city thing, but The stadiums are the biggest issue in the city right now that nobody's talking about. We are only a few years away from the expiration of those leases, and you'd be fooling yourself if you don't think the Steelers and Pirates have been making moves for years already, trying to get themselves ready to ask for a huge amount of money. Either for renovations or replacement. PNC will not be replaced. I can say that with near certainty. Acrisure, probably going to be looking for several hundred billion dollars for upgrades. But, I mean, that conversation could change quickly. And you see what's happening in Chicago. But, you know, hey, I got to get to a break, DJ. Thanks for... This may be a topic for the next segment because I was not thinking about this at all. But think about what's happening in Chicago right now. I don't think that the Steelers are moving to Wheeling, like the Bears may be moving to Hammond, Indiana. But city leaders and regional leaders better be ready to have a very difficult conversation about where we're going to spend taxpayer dollars on that kind of thing. We'll talk about that after this. I'm curious what you all think about the stadium situation, because that's coming down the pike. This is Brandon McGinley, columnist at the Post-Gazette, filling in for Marty today. Yeah, this was, I'm glad DJ brought this up, kind of out of the blue, but, you know, I was just looking at the situation in Chicago, where the Bears, looks like, you know, Indiana is offering, gosh, I don't remember the details of the deal, but it was over $1 billion in incentives to get the Bears to move to Hammond. Now, if you have ever driven from here to Chicago, or really from here anywhere west on I-80 or I-90, you know that Northwest Indiana, and I try to be nice about fellow parts of this country, but Northwest Indiana is the ugliest part of the country I've ever seen. It's really bad. It's just, it's, you know, you got Gary, and then Hammond is the town between Gary and the Illinois line, and it's swamps and mills, and it's and like ugly casinos. It's very deeply unappealing. But $1 billion in incentives talks, so the Bears are likely to end up there, because I don't think Illinois and or Chicago are going to be able to match, or they won't have to match the billion, but they have to give something that would entice them to stay. Now, it's hard for us in Pittsburgh to imagine the Steelers not playing in the city itself, but, you know, that lease is going to be up in the next few years. I think we're about 5 years or so left on the lease. Maybe a little less than that. I think it's a little less than that. And by the way, the amount of RAD money, the Regional Asset District money, which is the 1%, it's the additional 1% sales tax in Allegheny County, it's $13.4 million, not $20 million. So I overestimated that. $13.4 million a year goes to debt service on the two stadiums and the convention center. But, I mean, I think it'd be interesting to brainstorm where, in a world where Acrisure is not improved, not upgraded, to the tune of probably $600 or $700 million, but replaced entirely, where could you imagine that happening? It'd be hard to build on that site, because, you know, it's impossible. You can't. We could not build on that site, because it would take too long. You'd have to be building it while still playing in Acrisure. Where would it be? Butler County? Washington County? I have a fun dream. I think this is very unlikely. Maybe you all will think this is crazy. I love the idea of putting the football stadium on Bruno Island. That's that island. The first island in the Ohio River where the power plant is. And there's no bridges there. You'd have to build a whole bunch of infrastructure. It would be a huge pain. But how great would it be for the stadium to be on the island with a view of the point? That would be awesome. It's not going to happen. But if we're thinking big... If we're thinking big, I don't know. I think that island is a huge missed opportunity. I would put a whole neighborhood there if it were up to me. That's what they did over at Heron's Island, over at Washington's Landing. But no, I think the PNC Park situation is easier. They're going to ask for a whole bunch of public money in order to upgrade it, but we know it's not going anywhere. It's a classic. It'll be around for generations, and thank goodness for that. They built it so well. Something they did right. The Acrisure situation, though, I mean, at some point it's going to have to go. Whether that is during this lease cycle or during a later lease cycle, it's going to go. And there's nowhere else on the North Shore to build. That's a question that I think, it's one of these huge things. It's going to end up being a 9 or 10 figure deal. That's gonna absolutely possess the city's politics, and it's happening right now behind the scenes, I can guarantee you. But once that breaks out into the public, it's gonna be the biggest talk of the town that we've had in ages, probably since the last deal and Plan B and all that stuff. Maybe, you know, after we have to get to some news after that. I want to talk about U.S. Steel, but let's also talk a little bit more about public money for stadiums. And, you know, should Chicago have let the Bears go? Is it worth it? Is it worth putting public money to keep them around? Would you mind if the Steelers played in Cranberry or in Adams Township or Jackson Township up I-79 or played down near Washington down by the Wild Thing, something like that? Like, Would you care? Would you loot something? Or do you think that'd be brilliant? The Bills already play way out in the burbs. Let me know. After this.